Well, hello and welcome to today's episode of Breaking the Taboo. And we're now on our second series, and thank you so much to many listeners for getting in touch with ideas for episodes. And today's episode came about because in our previous series, we had a very interesting episode listening to fathers who'd witnessed traumatic births. But we also heard from one of the dads who'd very sadly lost their baby to Group B strep. And a lot of families got in touch to ask me, what is that? How can we reduce the risk of catching it? And how can we keep our babies safe? So today we have a very special episode looking specifically at Group Strep B, and I'm delighted to introduce our two guests. The first is Jane Plum, who co-founded the Group B Strep Support with her husband in 1996 after their middle child died from a Group B Strep infection. She's now its chief executive. Jane is also on the RCOG's Women's Voice lead and the Europe representative on the Council for the Confederation of Meningitis Organisations and a trustee of the Meningitis Research Foundation. Jane is involved with many groups working on Group B Strep services, particularly looking at trials. And I'm delighted to also be joined by Priya Vajja, who is a mother of two, who with her daughter Uma survived a serious Group B Strep infection. She's been an advocate for Group B Strep awareness and maternal mental health, and also drawing on her experience as a South Asian parent. And she lives with her husband and their daughters. So can I thank you both so much for coming on today's episode? And I think I should start by saying that I am not an expert on this topic, like many of our listeners. And that's really why I wanted to do today's show, Jane, was to really raise awareness about Group B strep. So perhaps we could start there and you could tell listeners, you know, what is it and a bit more about the bacteria.
Thank you. And thank you very much for inviting me on to talk and for doing this episode on Group B strep. Group B strep is a bug which lives in around about a quarter of all adults. Usually its home is in the lower intestines, and in women, it can also be in the vagina quite normally and quite naturally. It rarely presents problems for adults, but it can be passed on from mum to baby around birth, and in relatively rare cases it can cause serious infection in babies, like sepsis, so infection of the blood, pneumonia and meningitis. But for most babies, Group B strep isn't a problem at all. Having said that, for the small number of babies who do become unwell, the impact can be absolutely devastating. Most do recover fully, but others can face long-term health challenges, and tragically, some of those babies die. So it's really important to know about it, and particularly because most of these infections in babies are preventable, to know what you can do to reduce the risk to your baby.
That's really helpful to know. And if we could start off, Jane, by then just saying to mothers who are pregnant, listening to the show now, what are the risks that they should be aware of?
Anyone can carry Group B strep, and there are no outward signs that you are carrying Group B strep. So the only way to find out if you're carrying it is to be tested. In the UK, that's not something that is offered routinely to all pregnant women and people. It's offered to a small number of women, so those where they've previously carried Group B strep, then they would be offered a test in a subsequent pregnancy, but most of us aren't. So you wouldn't be tested, but you can test privately. There are places where you can obtain a private home testing pack. It costs around £50. You know, visit the Group B Strep Support website, because we list on there the organisations that follow the right processes for testing for Group B strep. And if you want to be tested for Group B strep, then the testing window is in the last 5 weeks of pregnancy. So for most people, that will be around about 35 to 37 weeks of pregnancy, because that will give time to get the results back, and time to think about and decide whether or not you want to have the preventative antibiotics in labour.
That's so helpful. And especially what you just said, that because people wouldn't notice if they had symptoms, that to be safe, having the test while you're in your late stages of pregnancy is so important to reduce the risks. I think that might be a good time, Jane, to introduce our listeners to why you've become such a huge advocate for raising awareness of this issue due to your own very sad personal experience. So I wondered if you could just briefly talk a bit about how you first learnt about the issue and its impact on your family.
So going back to 1996, I was a stay-at-home parent to a lively three-year-old, Oliver, and he was very excited to know that I was pregnant and he was expecting a brother. I was 25 weeks and I was just starting to enjoy the pregnancy. I'd suffered from awful, morning sickness, but all day, all night sickness. And I was starting to feel better. And then out of the blue, I went into labour. It was terrifying. I gave birth to a beautiful little boy called Theo. He was tiny, perfect, but really ill. The neonatal team did everything they could. But despite their best care, sadly, he died when he was just 17 hours old. As you and the listeners can imagine, we were devastated. The grief was crushing. And of course, it wasn't just us. It was also Oliver. He was heartbroken too. He kept asking us those impossible questions. You know, where's Theo? Why did Theo have to die? You know, he'd been so looking forward to a little brother. So how you explain that to a three-year-old, Lord alone knows, and I'm sure I didn't get it right. We soon found out that the cause of his death was a group B strep infection, and we'd not heard of it. Despite it being the most common cause of severe infection in newborn babies and mostly preventable, it was literally the first time we'd heard of it. And we couldn't believe how little awareness there was, even among health professionals. We went to see my GP, who was wonderful, and said those really important words that GPs often say, "I don't know much about it, but I'll find out." And he did and came back to us. But I also went to see the obstetrician, and frankly, most of what he told me was wrong. So Robert and I, my husband and I, decided to set up a charity to make sure that other families had the information that we didn't, to raise awareness, to support families and to push for change, because no one should go through what we did, not without any answers, without support, and frankly, without hope. So learning about Group B strep was a game changer because it gave us the confidence to try again. It was a terrifying pregnancy, but this, you know, my next pregnancy, I was given the recommended IV antibiotics in labour, and my beautiful daughter Camilla was born safe and well. So, you know, I was one of the early beneficiaries of the charity's work.
Well, firstly, Jane, thank you for sharing your story, and I'm so sorry to hear what happened to your son. But thank you for, you know, becoming an advocate for awareness, because, you know, I certainly, as a new mum, had never heard of Group Strep B. And, you know, what's so good about having Priya on the show as well is that, you know, her daughter did survive. And actually, I want to raise awareness so that families know where to ask for help and to look out for the signs, because this is, as you said, a totally preventable and treatable bacteria. So families need to know what to look out for. And Priya, thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, your daughter Uma also suffered from the same infection. Were you in the same boat, Priya, where you just, like Jane, didn't know much about it before it happened to you? When did you first come across the term?
Absolutely. I was in the same boat as Jane. As a second-time parent, I was very knowledgeable about many things, as we all are when we're pregnant and getting ready for birth. And I unfortunately found out about Group B strep following the traumatic birth that I had. I was handed a leaflet and off I trotted back home. And it took me a good 6 months to really start processing what happened. And I had a lot of unanswered questions that unfortunately I wasn't able to access through healthcare professionals. I found the wonderful charity Group B Strep Support 6 months later. Got lots of information that I needed, lots of myth busting, because in hospital I got told that it's very rare, it doesn't cause it. You don't need to get tested. And if I had had that test, the amount of trauma it could have saved me and my family, because yes, Uma did survive and she is a healthy, thriving 4-year-old today. But it was the aftermath, the trauma and the what ifs, you know, when you're fighting for your life, you're left with what would have happened if she didn't leave NICU alive.
Am I right in thinking, Priya, that you actually had your daughter, I think, during the COVID-19 pandemic, during lockdown, which, as we know, was a really difficult time. And in fact, I included quite a few stories in my book, Breaking the Taboo, from mums who'd given birth in the pandemic, because it was such a difficult time. So could I just talk a bit about symptoms? Like, when did you notice that something was wrong with Uma? And what are the kind of symptoms that other parents listening to the show should be looking out for?
Yes, absolutely. So you're right, it was the pandemic and I had to go into the hospital alone. My waters had broken because I had a high risk pregnancy. I had ITP. I was asked to go into maternity services and no contractions, nothing. So it was kind of premature rupture of the membranes. There's no sign of labour. It's about 30 fetal weeks, so quite early still. Got examined. The doctors took a swab. And just stayed in hospital. My husband was waiting outside the hospital because he couldn't come in, just waiting for updates, texts, phone calls, that kind of thing. Fast forward 23 hours later, whilst being in hospital, I started feeling quite warm, hot, shivery. The contractions started coming and they were, I'd obviously given birth before, but they were painful. Like, and within an hour, I'd gone from feeling quite high temperature to feeling like I was going to die. Rushed to the midwife looking after me was wonderful. She suspected something wasn't quite right, took me to the delivery suite. Again, I still didn't have my husband with me at this point. So I just was terrified. I was never going to see my husband, my eldest daughter, Amber, and the rest of my family again. It was very hazy, in and out of consciousness. I think I might have been asked to sign the NDA that you sign when you go into theatre. I had maternal sepsis at the time. I didn't realise I had maternal sepsis and they needed to act really fast. And the next thing you know, I was in theatre. And I think within that last 5 minutes, my husband was able to come up and, you know, he was very impacted by the trauma as well. Uma, she was delivered via emergency C-section under general anaesthetic. So I don't remember those moments. She was then born lifeless without my husband or myself present, and rushed to NICU. And I met her hours later, and I guess I was in survival mode. I found it quite difficult to hold her and bond with her because I was extremely poorly as well. And again, it being COVID, I didn't have my husband with me during those traumatic moments, only during the limited visiting hours that we needed. I did have a perinatal mental health nurse as well, who was absolutely brilliant, but I don't think she wasn't able to visit me either. And I really needed that empathy and compassion. And I think if I had had that empathy and compassion, I don't think my mental health would have been impacted as much. They went on to do quite a lot of invasive procedures on Uma. So Uma did have group B strep sepsis. In order to find out that she had this, they have to do procedures like lumbar punctures, which are awful for, you know, newborn babies. Suspected meningitis as well. And again, I didn't know much about it. Even when I left the hospital, I had no idea how serious it was until I found the wonderful charity that educated me and empowered me to now raise awareness and educate other mothers like me. And I tell every single family and friend member to get themselves tested in the later stages of their pregnancies now.
Well, Priya, thank you so much for talking about such a personal and a very difficult time that you had. But I think it's so important for families to hear this, A, so that they get tested if they're a pregnant mum now, but also so that if they've had a similar experience, they know that they're not alone and there are some wonderful organisations out there like Jane's Charity. So Jane, just to be really practical then for families listening, what should a parent be looking out for? What are the symptoms that a baby would display who's got group strep B that they should be aware of?
A great question. And the signs of a baby developing a group B strep infection tend to be non-specific. So it is about a baby seeming poorly, you know, not being themselves. Most of these infections in babies will show within the first 24 hours of life. So the baby's very likely still to be in hospital if that's where the baby's born. But things like a baby grunting, noisy breathing, moaning, high-pitched cry, being floppy, not feeding well or not keeping the milk down. I mean, as you can hear, none of that is a sort of one gotcha moment in terms of that's a group B strep infection. It can be those can be signs of different infections. So it's really, if your baby is not well and is not getting better, then the golden rule with group B strep is always, if in doubt, check it out and mention group B strep when you do. And of course, you know, Priya's story is horrendous, she and I have spoken about it once or twice in the past, and she was incredibly unfortunate to develop maternal sepsis caused by group B strep. That is very rare, but a pregnant woman or person won't have any symptoms whatsoever of carrying group B strep. You just won't know unless you're tested.
So this is back to the point about prevention. This is a totally treatable issue. So it's really important that families do take it seriously and do that. So all the symptoms that you've just described, as you said, not one very specific thing, but I think what they do all show is that you as a parent know your baby, and if it's out of sorts and it's displaying something which you just feel like there's a niggle, something's not quite right, you know, don't feel that you should just sit at home and, you know, not ask. Always ask for help and pick up the phone. And in that scenario, Jane, who is the first phone call that they should make?
When they've been discharged, they will have been given numbers of who to call, usually the maternity hospital. And I think you make a really important point. Call, don't sit on it. Please don't go to social media and say, what should I do? Call your health professional, call your midwife, call the out of hours, call 111. If you're really concerned, call 999. Health professionals would much, much, much rather see a healthy baby unnecessarily than miss a sick baby. So if you're not sure, please don't stay at home and worry. Talk to your health professional about it.
And so if we could just talk a bit about treatment for a minute, what would happen, Jane? So if you came back to see a healthcare professional with your baby who did in fact have the infection, what would be the next step? What would they be given to be treated?
They would be given antibiotics, intravenous antibiotics, so not tablets, and that they would, the first thing they would do that would happen would be samples would be taken, typically bloods, and if there is suspected meningitis, then a lumbar puncture to take some of the spinal fluid to see if the meningitis is present, because that changes the antibiotics that are needed. But that the baby, if the baby does have a group B strep infection, it's incredibly likely that they will need inpatient care in a SCBU or sometimes a NICU.
Okay, that's really helpful. And Priya, if we could just go back to you for a moment, and obviously you did have an extreme scenario, and I think it's important to tell listeners that, you know, a huge number of babies will be born, you know, every day and every week, and will not have any of the issues that we're describing. But I do think even if it's rare, it's very important to discuss the few things that can go wrong so that we can prevent other families from going through similar trauma to my two guests today. So Priya, could you just talk a bit about your recovery and care? And what was it that you were given to recover from sepsis and also for Uma too?
Following the birth of Uma, I was in hospital for several days afterwards. So she was given the antibiotics. She did develop jaundice as well. So spent quite a long time in hospital. And once I was discharged, I think that's when the kind of mental trauma really kicked in. So whilst we're both healthy, physically, left hospital. It was very isolating being a mother without any kind of complications, especially in a pandemic when you haven't got the help of your family. So I just really struggled to kind of bond with Uma, kind of struggled, just was grieving all those missed moments. So skin on skin, golden hour, all of that. And I had a lot of help from my perinatal mental health team, and kind of my psychiatrist, and just really struggled. So I went on to develop PTSD, quite severe depression and anxiety, just because I was just grieving what a birth I wanted, the pregnancy I wanted, what could have happened. And there was a lot of shame and stigma because I'd felt that I'd passed this bacteria on to my child, that I was blaming myself, that I'd given this horrible infection that nearly killed my daughter. And my mental health got really quite bad, to the point where there was discussions about mother and baby units. That's probably 5 or 6 months following the birth. That's when I started exploring therapy. So I did EMDR. I also had other types of therapy with therapists from my own cultural background, because whilst there's stigma attached to maternal health, mental health, it's even worse in South Asian communities. The stigma and the shame is, I found the wonderful Group B strep support 6 months later, as I said, and I made it my mission to think that I need to get better for my daughters. I need to heal. I've got two choices. I either just live in the depths of this trauma, or I heal. And found out more about Group B strep through the charity. And, you know, fast forward to today, I've been campaigning, I've been advocating, I've been raising vital funds for Group B strep support, talking about it. I ran the London Marathon last year for it, and it was such a significant part of my healing journey. Did the London Landmarks for Group B strep support this year. So for me, it's just empowering, educating, spreading the knowledge. If you can just tell one person, one in four people carry this. It is preventable, as Jane mentioned. You can get yourself tested. That power, that knowledge is so powerful, because it's not, like you said, it is rare, but it's not, and it's not about scaremongering. It's giving women the informed choice to make their own decisions when they're in their kind of antenatal care. And, you know, I would have loved to have had that information as a second-time mum, as a first-time mum.
When I needed help after my birth trauma, Erwin Mitchell's team of experts provided the support I needed to rebuild my life.
At Erwin Mitchell, we work closely with our clients through any challenges. We understand the impact of a birth injury and can help get the best medical support and rehabilitation for our clients and their families. Authorised and regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority.
Well, that's exactly, Priya, why I set up this podcast, was to raise awareness for families affected by birth trauma, and also pregnant mums to have a better understanding of risks, not to scare them, but actually the opposite, to say that they can have much better informed consent and get to decide for themselves with their bodies what they want to do. And I was really struck by what you just said, Priya, about your mental health issues afterwards. And what I would say to anyone listening to the show today who's had very similar experience and is feeling that kind of guilt or shame, whether it's about failing to bond with their baby, and we've heard that a lot when women have had a general anaesthetic and have obviously not had that kind of bonding moment when their child's arrived, or they've gone on to develop severe PTSD, do take a look at our earlier episode in series one, where we have a whole dedicated show specifically looking at post-traumatic stress disorder. And we have a psychiatrist who's on the show as a doctor, and she talks in a great deal of information about the different types of therapy available. So I'll signpost that in the show notes today, so if anyone's listening and wants to know more about that. And gosh, I mean, what really strikes me, Jane, listening to what Priya's just said is, firstly, just the lack of awareness, I think, in the general public that this is an thing that exists. Secondly, it's highly treatable. I mean, taking antibiotics is something so basic that you can basically get anywhere. So I'm interested to know, is our experience here in the UK different to other countries? What's the experience in other places around the world?
Yeah, the UK is somewhat out of kilter with other high income countries. In most high income countries like the US, Canada, Germany, Australia, it's routine to offer all pregnant women and people late in their pregnancy a test to find out if they're carrying group B strep. And if they are, then they're offered IV antibiotics as soon as they go into labour, and those are continued until the baby is born. It's simple, as you say, they're simple antibiotics. The recommended antibiotics is penicillin, but there are alternatives if people are allergic to penicillin. It's simple, effective, and it works. And those countries have seen big drops in their the number of babies who develop group B strep infection. The UK doesn't do this. Instead, we rely on an older risk factor approach, which means antibiotics in labour are only recommended or only offered if certain red flags are present. So, for example, if mum's in preterm labour, if she has a fever during labour, if there's any history of group B strep, and then she will be offered IV antibiotics in labour. And a very small group of women and people will be offered testing for group B strep. And the problem with doing it this way is that it misses too many cases. And we've been doing this in the UK since 2003, and we can see it hasn't worked because our number of group B strep infections has risen rather than fallen. So we really do need to do better. And yeah, the charity, we're working hard to change that. You know, we've worked to keep GBS on the agenda and on the radar. We pushed for better information for parents and professionals as well. And we've supported a major trial, the GBS3 trial in the UK, that is comparing the UK's current risk-based approach with testing approaches. That the results of that are due at the end of the year, and that could be a game changer. But until we have those results, families deserve better now. You know, they deserve good, clear information, real informed choice. You can't make an informed choice without information. We need to be doing all we can to protect the babies that are being born now.
Well, that's such helpful information, Jane. And I was struck just listening to you how so many times on the podcast I've heard how very different the experience are in different countries around the world. And as a former politician, I find it fascinating to see the differences in policy. And that's something that, you know, I've been campaigning for, is to try and standardise the maternity care offer across the UK and around the world, because I think every mum and every family should be offered the same level of care, and it shouldn't be a postcode lottery depending on where you live. So could I just ask you a bit about your charity, Group B Strep Support? If a family is listening to the show who'd like to find out a bit more, what do you do, and what are the type of resources that you have available?
The charity really does four things, or it falls under four topics. We provide information and support to families who want to know more about Group B Strep, ranging from somebody who's pregnant or somebody who just doesn't know anything at all about it, through to horrendous cases where a baby or a mum has been seriously ill. We raise awareness and improve the education for health professionals around Group B strep. We give talks. We've got a free e-learning module. We run annual conferences, etc., and provide shed loads of information to the NHS, information materials to the NHS for them to share with both their staff and also the health the families in their care. Thirdly, we campaign and advocate for improvements to Group B strep identification, treatment and prevention in the UK. And fourthly, we support research into better prevention around Group B strep, better understanding of, you know, what works and what doesn't, better understanding about the bug itself. So if anyone is interested in finding out more, we have a helpline, a free helpline that's available weekdays, 9 to 5. We're on social media. We get a lot of inquiries on social media. And our website has an absolute wealth of evidence-based, accurate, up-to-date information about Group B strep. So give us a call, drop us an email, get in touch. We'll help in any way we can.
That's so helpful, Jane. And for anyone listening to today's show, do check out the show notes afterwards and you'll find a link to the charity and their website, which I highly recommend. And Priya, obviously you gave birth during the pandemic, which was an incredibly difficult time. But I remember you said how you came across the charity, I think 6 months later. I think a lot of people don't want to talk about anything that's gone wrong during birth or with their child. And there seems to be a real sort of taboo and really a shame and a stigma attached to talking about things. And hopefully by, you know, doing this podcast and having on guests like yourselves, we're breaking that taboo by talking very openly about these things so that people feel less alone and that they can talk about it. So would you mind just sharing your experience of how you found Group B strep support? And for anyone who's feeling very alone and has had a similar experience, what advice would you offer them?
Yes. So unfortunately, I found the charity after I'd had the horrendous infection. I would love to have found the charity whilst I was pregnant, been given the leaflets whilst I was pregnant, so I could have made those informed choices. The reason I found them 6 months later was I was just in survival mode. I wasn't ready to process what had happened just yet. I had my birth debrief with my obstetrician, got my leaflet, and I just had so many unanswered questions. Why did I get it? Why me? What could I have done to prevent it? And I'm quite a curious person, so I needed to get those answers. And honestly, it started off with a Google search, Group B strep. And I was surprised to see all the infections it can cause, because we've all heard of sepsis, we've all heard of meningitis, we've all heard of pneumonia. Group B strep bacteria is the leading cause of those infections. And I think that's what parents need to hear, because we don't know what causes those infections often. And for some people, that's enough because they don't want to look back. But for me, I needed to empower myself so I could help myself if I went on to have future pregnancies. I just wanted to help other people as well. I wanted to just help my family, help my friends. And you talked about breaking the stigma. It absolutely was something that I needed to do, especially, again, I mentioned being from South Asian ethnicity, and it's just taboo to talk about maternal health problems, mental health, and there's a lot of underrepresentation of South Asian women and Black women in maternal health. So for me, it's been really important to speak up, represent them, and just really narrow that disparity that we see in healthcare for these women. Once I found the charity, there was just no stopping me really afterwards. It was just, let's turn this trauma, this pain into something positive. Let's raise awareness, let's educate, and let's stop Group B strep infections in the UK when it's preventable.
And how important has it been for you, Priya, to meet other families who've had a similar experience? Because a lot of people say to me, oh, I'm quite a shy person, Theo, I don't want to have to go and, you know, talk to other families. But I mean, my personal experience having suffered from my own birth trauma was, you know, actually meeting families who'd had a similar experience to myself really helped me to understand that what happened to me was quite unusual. And secondly, that I was not alone and I wasn't the only person it had happened to. But what was your experience?
That absolutely resonates with me, because I actually found it more triggering being around mums and pregnant women that had had positive births, because it's quite isolating, your experiences, because it is rare. I am a minority. So it can feel really invalidating when somebody is comparing your experience to something that isn't as serious. So talking to other women who have been through traumatic births, who have had Group B strep infections, has really given me a sense of kind of solidarity with them, because it's, you know, it's a safe space. You're not minimized. You're heard. And I think that's what you just want. You just want it to be listened to. You don't want to be fixed. Sometimes you just want to be heard.
That's so true. And I would encourage anyone listening to today's show who's thinking about reaching out to do so, because I think it's so important to speak to somebody about your experience. And from my own personal experience, I know it's really helped me with my recovery to know that that was the case. And one of the questions I always like to ask guests is a very specific kind of practical question. So Jane, if I could start with you in the hot seat, if there was one particular kind of resource that you would like to signpost families to, what is out there and what should they be looking at?
Well, I think surprising no one, I'm going to say do go and visit the Group B Strep Support website, because there's a wealth of information, evidence-based information on there, as well as our free helpline service. And we've got groups sometimes, as Priya was saying, sometimes people don't want to talk to other people, but sometimes joining, you know, for example, a Facebook group or something online where they can meet people virtually can be the way forward. We work very closely with the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and co-developed an information leaflet on Group B Strep, and that's available from our and their website, free to download, and it's also free to download in 14 additional languages as well as English. So that would be my one practical, go and find out more about it there.
And I'm interested that you've got some educational leaflets on there, because I think, Jane, the other thing to say is that not every GP is going to be as knowledgeable about this, or a midwife as well. So is there anything that they should, you know, print out and bring with them to an appointment with a medical professional? Like, don't assume that they know about it either.
It's better than it was. I mean, you know, going back to 1996, there was virtually nothing, and it is a lot better now. There are recommendations both from the RCOG and from NICE that Group B Strep, well, the RCOG says that all pregnant women and people should be provided with an information leaflet on Group B Strep, which is the trigger for us working with them to develop one. And NICE says that Group B Strep should be mentioned to everybody in pregnancy. So the health professionals should have that information and knowledge to share, but there's absolutely no harm in downloading that, having it on your phone, or printing it out and taking that information leaflet with you. Because if all health professionals knew just that, it would be such a step forward.
Yeah, that's so important. And Priya, as a mum who's been through this, both yourself and your daughter, what piece of advice or resource would you like to signpost listeners to today?
I would probably say similar to Jane. First, Group B Strep Support. But for me, it's the army of charities that got me through it. So there's loads out there. You've had Birth Trauma Association. There's charities out there to support you with your perinatal mental health. And helplines where you can speak to people that have gone through shared experiences. And I think that is so important, especially for me. It was so isolating during COVID, not having other friends and family that had been through similar experiences. So I'm going to cheat and say there's a lot of charities out there, Birth Trauma Association, Group B Strep Support, Pandas for me was a big one as well. So yeah, and just giving healthcare professionals access to those charities. So if they can't help us, that's fine. But there's charities that are experts in the field that can help you. So during COVID, if they didn't have the answers and they directed me to Group B Strep Support, that would have been brilliant, because I know they're experts in this topic and subject matter.
Well, I highly recommend all of those charities. And I've had so many listeners writing into me in the last few months asking for names of particular charities that I would recommend, that I should just signpost listeners. There's now a special dedicated page on my website for the podcast. So if you look under Birth Trauma and then Support, you'll find a whole list with a really useful go-to sort of directory, if you like, of services for everything that covers, you know, maternal mental health, birth injuries, and then the more specialist topics like today. Well, we are rushing to the end of the episode. So I just want to come to one really important final discussion, which is about policy. And both of you have been campaigning to raise awareness of Group Strep B to make sure that other families don't go through the same experience that you did. So, Jane, if I could start with you, we know that politicians are listening to the show. So if you had the ear of the Prime Minister or the Health Secretary and you wanted him to do one thing to improve maternity care, to reduce birth trauma and rates of group strep B, what would you want them to do?
First, can we have a meeting? But that would be my first request. My second would be to say there are literally hundreds of babies every year developing severe group B strep infection, all for the sake of a test that would cost the NHS about 15 quid. The UK needs to be taking it much more seriously, and we need to be introducing free testing on the NHS for all pregnant women and people, because it would save money, because you'd reduce the number of these babies developing infection, and it would also save lives. So yeah, one baby developing an avoidable severe infection is one baby too many.
Well, that's a very good point. And I hope that Keir Starmer and Wes Streeting are listening to today's episode. And I should add that that chimes with, so many recommendations that we had in the birth trauma inquiry of just providing universal services. And as I said, ending this postcode lottery so that every family does get offered the same care pathways. And Priya, what would you like to ask the government to do to tackle this?
I would say don't hide behind your stats. We are stories, we are women, we have been through our own trauma. Listen to us, give us empathy, make it mandatory to give this information to women so they can make that informed choice. Make it mandatory to have that test in your pregnancy, because we have a million things to worry about. This is just one less thing. And again, with my South Asian mother hat on, we know that group B strep is significantly, the risks are higher in Black and Asian women. So if we can't give it to white women, make it mandatory for Black women, where it's 51% significantly higher than white infants, 28% for South Asian mums.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think it's really important that we do talk about inequalities in health and that people do know about additional risk factors from different ethnic groups. So thank you for pointing that out. And I think what really struck me listening to you both today was actually, Priya, your point about, you know, pneumonia, meningitis, sepsis. Those are all terms which I think are very well known to the British public. But what I didn't know until today was how group strep B can really be the cause of many of these things. So for you to come on today and raise awareness of this issue, I think is incredibly important. And I'd just like to say thank you to you both for sharing your personal stories, because I think it's so important to have that firsthand experience so that other families know that they are not alone in their experience, but also to give some really practical recommendations. So if you've enjoyed today's show, please do rate us on Apple iTunes to make sure that as many families find us as possible. And also, I'd love to hear from you. Today's episode came about because we had listener questions about this. They had heard a father speaking about it and wanted to know more. So we do read your listener feedback. We want to hear from you. If you've got ideas for guests or topics that you'd like us to cover on the next series of the show, then please do contact me via my website or social media, and we'd love to hear from you. So I'd like to say a huge thank you to both of my guests, for Jane and Priya, for coming on today. If anyone would like to know more about group strep B, then please do look at today's show notes. You'll find a wealth of links to a number of the organisations that they mentioned, and also to some of the leaflets that Jane has outlined. So thank you very much for joining us today on Breaking the Taboo, and stay tuned for next week's episode. Bye-bye for now.